From the Moen Broadcast Center at KPCC, this is The Frame. I'm John Horn. On today's show, a year after Grammys So Male, things are a little different with today's nominations. Then songwriter Mark Ronson takes us inside the studio with Lady Gaga when they first started writing Shallow, the Grammy-nominated song from A Star Is Born.
Everyone puts their headphones on. And it's kind of nice because it's like a ritualistic thing. Like, you put the headphones on because she's singing. You hear every nuance of her voice. That close is almost like it's inside your head. It's quite inspiring.
And Kevin Hart is out as the Oscars MC. So who should host the Academy Awards? All that coming up on The Frame.
KPCC podcasts are supported by Warner Brothers Pictures, presenting the emotionally authentic A Star Is Born, directed by Bradley Cooper, starring Cooper, Lady Gaga, and Sam Elliott, for consideration in all categories.
Welcome to The Frame. I'm John Horn. Thanks for joining us. The nominations for next year's Grammys are in, and already the results are a big improvement from the last time around, where the lack of women artists drew harsh criticism and led to the hashtag Grammys So Male. Although Kendrick Lamar and Drake led the pack with the most nominations, women dominated the four major categories: Record of the Year, Song of the Year, Album of the Year, and Best New Artist, more than doubling the amount of female nominees from a year ago. Not everyone got a lot of Grammy love. A number of major artists were snubbed, including Taylor Swift, who's typically a Grammy shoo-in. She received only one nomination for Best Vocal Album. To sort through the results, I called up Variety's executive music editor, Shirley Halperin.
There's definitely more representation by women, for sure. I mean, there are categories like pop vocal where, you know, four out of the five nominees are women. So it seems like there's been some course correction there. Also, they expanded the four main categories to eight nominations, which, you know, allows for a lot more diversity.
I want to ask you about the Best New Artist category, because in years past, it always seems like it's somebody who's been around a number of years. So what is the qualifying criteria here? And were there some artists who actually were Best New Artists who were recognized, and maybe somebody who seems like they've been around for a while who maybe shouldn't have?
Yeah, it's a very, very tricky category. It always has been. So, for example, someone like a Camila Cabello, who's a singer in Fifth Harmony. Fifth Harmony had already put her on the map, so she's not eligible to be Best New Artist. At the same time, the country singer Kane Brown, he had had a couple of commercial releases, independent commercial releases, and that deemed him ineligible. So it's not always consistent. I think that's the problem with that category.
The Black Panther soundtrack was honored in the Best Album category. How unusual is it for a soundtrack album to end up in that race?
Do you not remember Oh Brother, Where Art Thou?
Okay, that's a while ago, though.
I know, but it was huge. Look, every decade or so, an album comes along that is a soundtrack album, and it really takes the world by storm. And I definitely remember Oh Brother being that album, and I think of Black Panther as that album as well. It is, you know, connected to a very important sort of cultural touchstone story of the year. And the music's fantastic. It had two giant hit songs that came off that soundtrack, Pray For Me by The Weeknd and All The Lights by Kendrick Lamar and SZA, both of which, you know, are just fantastic and could each stand on their own as Song of the Year. So it's rare, yes, but it's not completely unusual, like unheard of.
In one area, the Grammy voters seem to be a little bit out of step with a emerging trend, and that is Latin music. Some of the biggest global stars include Ozuna, Natty Natasha, but it feels like Spanish-speaking artists only seem to get attention when they're accompanied by American stars. Last year, Justin Bieber with Luis Fonsi. This year, it's Cardi B with Bad Bunny and J Balvin. Hey. So where do you think the Grammys might be coming up a little bit short when it comes to Latin music?
Yeah, you know, Despacito was a big miss, you know, on the Grammys part. And, you know, I like it at least, you know, it has Latin roots even beyond J Balvin and Bad Bunny in that it samples a classic, you know, Latin Fania track. So there's that too, which I think does add some credibility to it. And, you know, at Variety, we actually just wrote about how that song came together. And one thing that we learned is that they recorded in like 5 different cities. It took many, many months. This is one of those songs that is really constructed in a way to be a Grammy contender, you know. So I wouldn't necessarily just, you know, criticize it just because of the J Balvin Bad Bunny affiliation. It is actually a very, you know, well-constructed song and deserves recognition just for that.
The Grammys, like a lot of other award shows, the Oscars and the Emmys, are often criticized for being out of touch with what's popular. And you can take an artist like Post Malone, who sells a lot of records and may not be actually that talented. Do the Grammys actually, have they figured out a middle ground between what is good and what is popular? How would you judge their progress, or even if they have to make progress on that front?
I think the Grammys struggle with it year after year. It comes down to the sort of committee system that they have, where I do think it's almost like, you know, I'm not in those rooms, but I almost imagine it as like the worst kind of peer pressure to, you know, recognize what is successful. But if you look at like the Record of the Year category, I really do feel like it offers a little bit of everything. You have Childish Gambino with This Is America, which is, you know, a very, very poignant and important song. You have Brandi Carlile, who is a very important songwriter and up-and-coming artist. You have Drake, who is undeniably the biggest artist in the world. Lady Gaga and Bradley Cooper. I mean, it is kind of funny that Bradley Cooper has more nominations than Taylor Swift at the Grammys this year, you know, another anomaly. Zedd, Maren Morrison, Gray, which is hands down just the most undeniable song of the year. I Like It, which we spoke about. And so I'm not hating on any of these nominees. I really do think that they thought long and hard about what's popular, what's deserving, what's in the zeitgeist, and, you know, what will probably get the best talent to show up at the event. That is actually probably the most important part.
Shirley Halperin is the executive editor of music for Variety. Shirley, thanks so much for taking time and coming on the show.
Thanks, John.
Coming up, record producer and songwriter Mark Ronson got a couple of nominations, one for his work with Lady Gaga.
KPCC podcasts are supported by Warner Brothers Pictures, presenting the emotionally authentic A Star Is Born, directed by Bradley Cooper, starring Cooper, Lady Gaga, and Sam Elliott. Joe Morgenstern of The Wall Street Journal says it's fresh from thunderous start to exquisite finish, and Owen Gleiberman of Variety calls it an emotional knockout. For consideration in all categories, including Best Picture and Best Director.
Welcome back to The Frame. I'm John Horn. Thanks for joining us. Very few of us ever get the chance to be right there in the room with an artist as he or she creates. But for record producer and songwriter Mark Ronson, that's his job. He's made hit music with Miley Cyrus, Bruno Mars, Diplo, and Dua Lipa, among many others. He was also a producer and songwriter on the 2016 Lady Gaga album, Joanne. And he's a songwriter on Shallow, the ballad that she sings with Bradley Cooper in their movie, A Star Is Born. In the film, Gaga plays Allie, herself a singer-songwriter, and today Shallow earned 4 Grammy nominations. When Ronson visited the Frame studio the other day, he told me about meeting Lady Gaga for the first time.
12 years ago, I had a label through Interscope. We had this rapper, Wale, from D.C. He's a great rapper, was signed to our label, and he did a first single called Chilling. D.C. Chilling, PG Chilling. Gaga was like this fledgling pop artist, and Jimmy Iovine, and somebody was like, you should get her on it. Like, and we're like, okay, so we watched the video for Just Dance, and we're like, she certainly looks cool, and she can sing, that's for sure, so let's have her come. And she sang on this hip-hop hook. We did part of it in New York, and then she came and met me in London. The paparazzi thing was just starting to follow her, and she was wearing like the latex bodysuit, like, and she looked amazing. She came in and sang this song, killed it. Obviously, someone who can sing like that, you don't need more than two takes. And then I took her out to my friend Anthony's house, who had this big loft where, like, all the musicians went to after hours, kind of a bit of a party loft, like, in East London. And she hung out all night. Wait, and Anthony's a co-writer on Shallow. That's such a strange thing. I've never put this whole thing together before.
This is Anthony Rossomondo?
This is Anthony Rossomondo's apartment. We're there late night. She was just hanging out in this jam session playing drums. And her tour bus, actually, she was so late to get back to the hotel that her tour bus had to come to Anthony's apartment and was parked outside on these, you know, English streets are like tiny and narrow. Like, everything was like... And there's just this double wide, huge tour bus, so, like, parked, and we hear this like buzzer, and it's like, hi, who is it? It's probably 5 a.m. at this point. It's like, yeah, I'm whatever. I'm Lady Gaga's tour manager. Could you please tell her to come downstairs? We have to get to Birmingham. And that's really nice that you made me remember that story, because I'd totally forgotten. It's kind of nice that it was Anthony Rossomondo's apartment, and this kind of like circle.
Do you remember when you're in the studio with somebody, it could be Lady Gaga, it could be somebody else, and they start doing whatever it is they're doing, and you know immediately there's something special about this person?
With Gaga, it's a very specific thing, because basically we did that song about 12 years ago, and I would kind of see her every now and then at something, and then, but we would talk about working, but it never really happened until she called me when she was ready to start Joanne. So it was like definitely a familiarity when we got in the room. By this point, I've been watching her play for 10 years. So I'm fully aware of her talent. But it doesn't change the fact, like, when you get in there and you sit at the piano or the guitar, like you said, and you hear that person do that thing, and you're, like, in that proximity to it.
Take my hand, stay Joanne, heaven's not.
And the first couple songs that we wrote for her album, Joanne, the song Joanne, the title track, and the song called Diamond Heart, just came so quickly because there was a bit of a familiarity there.
Needs you more than the angels do. Girl, where do you think you're going? Where do you think you're going?
Is there also something specific to your partnership as creators, that you can work with a lot of very talented people, but there has to be some sort of creative chemistry for you to elevate what you do and for the artist to elevate what he or she does so that it all comes together as one?
It's definitely that. And I don't know if I've just been incredibly fortunate to really only end up, you know, in the foxhole or whatever you want to call it with those kind of people. But yeah, Gaga's definitely one of them. I think that I've only work with maybe people that have a certain amount of, like, certainly a lot of authenticity in their music, you know? So that's why when you're working with those people and they're kind of willing to go there and you're willing to go there and you're kind of, like, willing to submerge into their world for that moment, I always end up working with these people that you kind of have to, like, check into their world and just be there for 5 or 6 months. I guess that's how you get that kind of camaraderie or that thing, or you get into those personal zones where you can make art.
When did she tell you that she was either thinking about or was going to do Stars Born? How far before you actually started working on songs?
We've been probably working on Joanne for like a month, and suddenly there was this like Stars Born talk, and it just kind of like took over everything, kind of in a way that I was like, oh, like, not oh brother, but just a bit like, I didn't know when this movie's gonna be, what it is. Like, I've been brought in by Interscope Records to make Joanne, and she was a friend at that point, so I'm like, all right, I'll take a week out of this thing to work on Stars Born or whatever it is. And do you ever watch the Larry Sanders Show? Is that a little
sure.
bit?
No, okay. I know what it is.
You know when, like, Larry starts hanging out with Kevin Nealon all the time and Hank starts becoming mad? He's like, Kevin Nealon. That's what it felt like. Bradley Cooper. Like, that's all I heard for, like, about a week. And then you finally meet Bradley Cooper and he comes in and he just, like, glows this, like, baked aura, and you're just totally like, okay, I get it. So we started working on stuff, and she just came in one day to the studio and she's like, all right, I have this idea for a chorus. And she has that thing where Everyone puts the headphones on. And it's kind of nice because it's like a ritualistic thing. Like, you put the headphones on because she's singing. You hear every nuance of her voice. Like, that close is almost like it's inside your head. It's quite inspiring. So we go, and she's got this idea for this chorus, and I think she started off with it, you know, I'm off the deep end.
I'm off the deep end. Watch as I dive in.
There was a couple chords. She was like, I think it's around here. You know, she's like hammering at the piano.
I never meet the ground.
Sometimes with someone like her, most of the song's in her head. And as a producer, you're just there to like be a bouncing board, kind of like throw a couplet. I think I probably had Surface and Heard Us, like, because I was like, okay, I know where she's trying to go, like, and you're just throwing couplets that she might be able to insert into her narrative is really what's going on.
Crash through the surface where they can't hurt us. We're far from the shallow.
And then getting out the way too much, because like her language is different than mine, and I don't want to like pollute the water too much either.
I have this image of her almost as this chef that in some ways she knows what this recipe is, but she doesn't quite know how to plate it. And yeah, you're like giving her ingredients so that all of the flavors kind of come together.
It kind of is. And it's like sometimes it's a little bit more. Sometimes you're giving a couple chords. It's not even like I'm throwing the ingredients into the pot, because then it might be too late. I'm like holding up celery, like, you want to try this? Like, and that's sort of what it is. So, and then I think that it took a little while, like we were trying some verse ideas or something, and I think we were just hitting a wall and maybe overdoing it on like the swimming drowning analogy, and just took a break from it for a minute. And then Anthony and Andrew were playing this that guitar line. And then she just sang, like, tell me something, girl. Like, I don't know where that came from or what that was, but that was just like, ugh.
Tell me something, girl. Are you happy in this modern world? Or do you need more?
And then, obviously, it wasn't intentionally meant for it to be a duet. It was just a song for Allie to sing. And then it wasn't until I saw the first cut or rough assemblage of the movie that I saw he had turned it into a duet. And I was like, oh, man, like, it's just, yeah, it was just, it was really, it was special. I just kind of wanted to, like, run out of, like, it was, Bradley Cooper was very kind and invited me to his house to watch this rough assemblage. And, like, as soon as that happened, I just wanted to, like, dart out of the room and call Anthony and Andrew and be like, you guys aren't going to believe this.
Tell me something, boy. Aren't you tired trying to fill that void? Or do you need more? Ain't it hard keeping it so hard?
This is a movie about a couple, but it's also a story about songwriting. When you look at movies, any movie, and they have people writing songs, what do they usually get wrong?
I think that David Byrne says it in his book. Is it How Music Works? Right. And he says, like, we all have this kind of idea in our head, like it's like the movie with Mozart, and he's suddenly like this lightning bolt idea, and he like holds the pen up, and then he scribbles furiously for 3 hours, and there it is. It's a concerto. And I think that maybe for the sake of a movie when it's only 2 hours long, they have to do that. But Bradley spent a lot of time around the studio, and he was coming in and out when we were making Joanne. And he has a lot of, you know, he's a big music buff, so he has a lot of other friends that are musicians. And he had a lot of respect for showing the way it works. And it is a film, so they do have to condense certain things. But there was no moment where it was, like, cringy or like, oh, they'd never do that.
Mark Ronson, thanks for coming in.
Thank you very much.
Mark Ronson is a songwriter on Shallow. It's from the film A Star Is Born, which is in theaters now. Coming up, who is going to host the Oscars? the Academy of Motion Picture Arts and Sciences has just 2 months to find a new host to emcee the 91st Annual Academy Awards. Last night, comedian Kevin Hart, who'd been hired just this week to do the gig, dropped out following intense criticism of his homophobic social media posts and stand-up performances. Hart initially refused to apologize for his bigotry, but eventually said he was, quote, sorry that I hurt people. It's hard to believe that the producers of the Oscars didn't do a cursory search of Hart's social media accounts, or if they did, why they still hired him. Either way, it doesn't look good. To discuss Hart and the Oscars, I called up Kyle Buchanan. He covers awards for the New York Times.
I think they take his prominence, his stardom, as all the vetting that they needed. It's probably says more about us as a culture than it says about the Academy that his anti-gay tweets had really not been met with real vehemence until now.
He said initially, after this controversy was starting to build, our world is becoming beyond crazy, and I'm not going to let the craziness frustrate me. I think he really kind of mischaracterizes what this debate is about. It's not about crazy. It's about bigoted, hurtful, homophobic comments that are in plain sight. And for any business, especially Hollywood, to promote somebody to a public platform who is sharing these kinds of views, to my mind, feels really wrong. What was the Academy actually hoping for? What was he going to bring the Oscars, even with all this baggage?
Well, to be honest, in a lot of ways, aside from what you just said, he seemed like the ideal person to host the Oscars in some respects. The Academy obviously wants a younger, hipper take on the Oscars. Kevin Hart is, at the peak of his stardom as a movie star and as a comedian. And crucially, he's somebody who, at least until this week, wanted to host the Oscars. I think a lot of the time, the Oscars hire hosts, usually men, who seem like they'd rather be anywhere else. And Kevin Hart had said for years that it was his dream to host the Oscars, though apparently a dream that could be easily torpedoed by an unwillingness to apologize.
One of the things that's notable is the last two Oscar shows, which were hosted by Jimmy Kimmel, had terrible ratings. Last year was a record low, 26.5 million viewers. So it is really kind of a difficult job for anybody. Is there any way that a host can actually elevate the show, or are the audience numbers really governed by the films that are in competition?
Yeah, I do think so. I mean, I know a lot of the time, and obviously this was the rationale between trying to introduce that popular film Oscar, there's the notion of the highest rated Oscars, or the Oscars that people get most engaged in, are the ones with giant films in play, like a Titanic or a Lord of the Rings. But what I always say to that is the Oscar telecast that drew even more voters than the one where Lord of the Rings, Return of the King won Best Picture was when 12 Years a Slave won Best Picture. And no disrespect to 12 Years a Slave, I think that had a lot to do with the fact that Ellen DeGeneres was hosting it. She is a woman that people tune in to see and has incredible command over social media. I do think that the host has a whole lot of bearing on whether people tune in. But I think that the Oscars and who they select as a host says a lot about what the Oscars even think that they are. You know, a lot of the changes that they've made recently, whether it's cutting categories from the broadcast or trying to introduce that popular film Oscar, suggest that they're almost apologizing for themselves. And certainly Kimmel's, you know, sort of wan countenance on stage had that vibe. I think they need to hire somebody who will celebrate this. The Oscars are not just about celebrating the year in popular film. The Oscars are about celebrating themselves, and they should be unabashed about it.
You have in the past been an advocate for Dwayne The Rock Johnson as a host. My editor, Darby Maloney, made a case for Wanda Sykes. I would argue that maybe Hasan Minhaj would be a good replacement. It is obviously a very difficult job. You get none of the credit and all of the blame. Who might be a good replacement to Kevin Hart?
Well, at this point, they're going to have to scramble. A lot of the really famous people that they would have liked to go to, they're booked in February. Even Kevin Hart was booked, but he was willing at first to change around his schedule. The thing that I haven't understood is if the Academy is so desperate to get movies like the kind that Ryan Reynolds stars in on the telecast, why don't they just hire Ryan Reynolds to host it? He's got that exact mix of smarm and charm that kind of usually works well in an Oscar host.
Yeah, and if they hire Ryan Reynolds, they also must hire the writers for Deadpool because they really, I think, understand how Hollywood works and how it can be made fun of. And I want to step back and say, even with all of this horrible Kevin Hart news, it does look like the Academy Awards right now has the potential to embrace a pretty broad slate of films and filmmakers. We have Barry Jenkins' film, If Beale Street Could Talk, looking like a contender, Alfonso Cuarón's movie, Roma. We have Ryan Coogler's Black Panther. We have Spike Lee's Black Klansman. Do you think that this year might actually be a very good year for inclusion, even if the Academy made an initial bad choice in host?
Yes, potentially. But, you know, I mean, no matter what happens with the Oscars, I always say that they're this fascinating lens to view where we are as a culture in that year. And so when I'm looking at those nominations, certainly I'm seeing a lot of ways it will reflect 2018 as a whole, whether that's Black Panther potentially being nominated and representing our superhero saturated era, or something like Roma being nominated and representing Netflix's incursion into this industry. But I think that also has not just to do with the nominations, but all of this Kevin Hart mess too. You know, the idea that somebody is sort of hoisting himself on his own petard because of tweets that he made. I mean, in the era of President Trump, it seems all too fitting.
Kyle Buchanan is the Carpetbagger columnist for the New York Times. Kyle, as always, it's a pleasure to have you on the show. Have a great weekend, and thanks for coming back on.
You too, John.
And that's it for this week. If you missed any episodes, you can always catch up with the Frame podcast. You can find it wherever you like to listen. This show is produced by Oscar Garza, Darby Maloney, Monica Bushman, and Jonathan Shiflett, with help today from Brianna Flores. Our intern is Maria Alexa Cavanaugh. Our engineer is Valentina Rivera. And I'm John Horn. Thanks so much for listening. Have a great weekend. We'll see you back here on Monday.